Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Money Talking from WNYC. Good morning, I'm Charlie Herman. Today is the final day of voting for what could be an entirely new type of relationship between management and labor in this country. And it's happening in a place not usually associated with unions, Tennessee. It involves Volkswagen, the Auto Workers Union, as well as a lot of opposition from elected officials. Well, here to explain are regular contributors Joan Ocero with the New York Times and Rana Faruhar with Time Magazine. And Rana, you brought this story to our attention a couple weeks ago. So first, just bring us up to speed on where things stand.
So, as you said, we're going to the third day of voting at the VW factory in Chattanooga. And the workers are voting on whether or not to start what's called a works council. That's a Germanic idea. It's something that's very common in Germany. And basically, it's a council where management, labor, sometimes civic leaders, local community leaders all sit together and make decisions about big company strategy, where certain kinds of cars are going to be developed, what worker pay is going to be, how furloughs are going to happen or not. This is something that's common to VW all around the world, except in Tennessee at this plant, except in the U.S. And this is the big question. Are we now going to see not only a union in a state that's really not known for it and with officials that are fighting this quite hard, including Senator Corker of Tennessee, but are we going to see this new kind of labor movement in the U.S. that we haven't seen before, one that's much more collaborative and not contentious?
Well, Joe, how significant do you think it would be if this union were approved, this new type of works council and joining the UAW in Tennessee, would it be, how significant would that be for the labor movement?
Well, the labor movement has been struggling for a while to find a new way because the old way hasn't been working. And labor's lost a lot of battles, and places like Walmart have fought fiercely to keep unions out. And so I think this could be significant because it does point the way to a different kind of labor relationship with management. And the second reason it's significant is, frankly, because it's in Tennessee as well. The southern states, you know, are called right-to-work states. They're generally anti-union. And what's interesting in this situation is that Volkswagen is not really opposed to the union idea at all. The opposition is coming from elected officials and from, you know, conservative ideologues who don't like unions.
But it just seems that we're kind of in this moment where we're hearing a lot about labor movements and minimum wage. We're hearing about the possible unionization or the push to unionize fast food workers or, as you're saying, Joe, places in the South, knowledge workers joining freelance unions. Why do we think this is happening now?
I think there is a real structural problem in our economy with labor's share of the economic pie being at its lowest level in many, many decades. And I think, and have said before on the show, many economists agree with this, that I don't think you will have a strong and lasting recovery unless you start to see wages increase, unless you start to see more of that share of prosperity going to workers in this country. You cannot have a system in which the corporate share of the pie is as big as it is and you're not getting any kind of a trickle-down effect.
And unions do tend to emerge at times when workers are not getting a fair shake. You know, that's the history of unions in this country. That's the history of unions in Europe. The minimum wage is very connected to this. The two ideas really are kind of intertwined in the sense that Democrats are pushing for a rise in the minimum wage precisely because the amount that the minimum wage is just not enough for people to make a living. More and more people who are working in fast food places are not teenagers, but they're mothers or fathers or people who are trying to support themselves. And so it's natural that they would be more inclined to think kindly on a union movement.
Do you think that's why maybe we're seeing increased unionization in a place like the South where we haven't necessarily seen unions?
I think so. As a matter of fact, I've been speaking to some workers in Chattanooga, and they're surprised themselves at the strength of feeling around this. I mean, I spoke to one worker who said, you know, look, I've always been a conservative. I never thought that I would be pro-union, but this idea is a good one, and we want to have a say in what automobiles get brought here and how this factory works.
Well, let me turn to another big business story that's happening that we just learned about. Comcast is planning to buy Time Warner Cable. You can sort of see this as a merger of one company that consumers hate with another company that consumers hate. So when you see this merger, what does this actually mean for the television industry, for the cable industry?
Everybody hates the cable guy, right? I think that ultimately this is going to mean higher prices for consumers. I think there's going to be regulatory issues. And in a sense, because it's just a way of delaying the inevitable, right? It's a way of two big companies coming together, trying to have more heft and delay what is an eventual move that everybody's going to be making towards streaming video, towards video on demand on the internet. I think it's going to make a lot of people angry, and it may actually have a backfire effect.
Listening to the Comcast conference calls on Thursday, one of the things that I found most striking and actually kind of amusing was the fact that Comcast was arguing that the regulators should let this go through because they didn't compete with Time Warner anywhere. Well, of course they don't, because cables have monopolies.
Right.
Cable companies have cable monopolies wherever they are, and their competition is
so structurally, they are not allowed to compete with each other, hence we should be allowed to.
Yes, that's right.
Well, let's take a look at some of the other stories we're watching that are coming up. Rana, what are you paying attention to?
Well, I'm looking at a new case that's taking shape, a nonprofit organization called Better Markets, which is a consumer financial advocacy group, is challenging the $13 billion out-of-court settlement that was made by JPMorgan Chase a while back. And what this case is all about is the idea that we don't care how much you've paid in fines. We want this to be investigated. We want there to be a full investigation into what banks did during the financial crisis, so that we can find out, should anybody have gone to jail? Were laws broken? How should the system be restructured? And I think it goes to the fact that there are a lot of people still that feel, even with Dodd-Frank, even with some of the measures that have been passed, that we really don't have a system that's safer, and that they want to get to the bottom of this.
Joe, what stories are you watching?
Well, I am watching Bitcoin. One of Bitcoin's biggest backers has been charged with using Bitcoin to help facilitate drug trades. The biggest Bitcoin exchange has basically, if it not shut down, had all kinds of problems, blaming it on Bitcoin software. And most recently, two other Bitcoin exchanges have been hacked by various groups.
And the price has dropped dramatically.
Right, from 850, right, from 850 at the beginning of February to 650 now. And so the question remains, what will be the next shoe to drop for Bitcoin, and can it survive these various mishaps?
Well, we'll be watching those stories in all the week's financial news at WNYC.org/business. And don't forget, you can take this program with you as a podcast available on iTunes. Rana Faruhar with Time Magazine, Jonah Serra with The New York Times, thanks so much for joining.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I'm Charlie Herman. This is Money Talking from WNYC.